morning, everyone. I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. The World Health Organization has announced that trials of a new malaria vaccine will take place in three African countries, Kenya, Ghana, and Malawi. The announcement was made ahead of the UN's World Malaria Day, which is today, April 25th. WHO says there has been a 29% decrease in global malaria mortality rates between 2010 and 2015, and 21% global decrease in malaria incidence between 2010 and 2015. However, despite progress, there were 212 million malaria cases worldwide in 2015. Observers say more needs to be done to protect communities against the mosquito-borne disease. We will discuss malaria on the program today. And joining us in the studio to do that is Dr. Busiku Hameza, epidemiologist with Zambia's National Malaria Elimination Program. Dr. Busiku, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good evening.
Good evening. Okay. Also joining us in the studio is Miriam Chisamba. She's a certified midwife and works in Zambia. And where do you work exactly?
Kafumbo Health Center.
That's right. Fantastic. It is so good to have the both of you here. And also, we will be joined by Dr. David Schellenberg with the World Health Organization in a moment. But let me go straight to you, Dr. Busiku. One of the goals for this year, World Malaria Day, at least that is being has been launched in Zambia, is elimination, malaria elimination by 2021. And as I like to say, this is a very ambitious goal, given especially given that the global goal is elimination by 2030. So what is the secret with Zambia? What are the strategies to achieve this goal?
Thank you very much for that question. I think for Zambia, really, it's a situation where we could not just stay with the status quo. We needed to do something different, get onto some very ambitious agenda. We are really trying to see how we can accelerate ourselves to a situation of malaria elimination by 2021, using what we are calling the A to E strategy. Basically, the A is looking at how we can optimize our current interventions, that is the use of nets, indoor residual spraying, case management, which is really encompassing diagnostics as well as treatment, and also trying to see how we can increase the arms of our, the reach of our health services through community health workers. Uh-huh. The B is really trying to improve our surveillance systems so that we can understand where the problems are. And then the C is really focused on community-wide interventions that are meant to reduce the disease burden on a community scale. The D will focus on trying to have reactive interventions.
Yes.
Whenever we detect a case of malaria at a health facility or within the community, we then follow that case at source at home. And, of course, the E is where we want to be, which is elimination.
Okay, and we'll keep an eye on Zambia and see where we are in 2021. And Dr. Busiku spoke about community health worker and the importance of people like you, Miriam, who's directly in contact with the community on a day-to-day basis and see people coming to the hospital, to the health centers. Can you tell us what you are observing on the ground with regards to your experience with dealing with malaria?
Okay, thank you very much. The situation on the ground has been lifted up with the introduction of the test and treat that is supplying the community health workers with the rapid diagnostic test and also the treatment. It has been really been lifted off because the community health workers do the testing right there in the community, and the community has got faith and trust in them. It's like the community health worker is on call 24/7. Mm-hmm. And if anyone feels or maybe they're not feeling well, they go and knock on the doorstep of the community health worker, and any time he can help them, even when they're at the fields, when they're maybe tilling the land and then they like feel as if they have got signs and symptoms of malaria, they'll go to his field and then he'll do the testing right there and there. If they're found with malaria, then the treatment will be given to them. But if they're not found with malaria, then he refers them back to the rural health center, to the facility, so that we can further manage them. Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
Now, the work of someone like Miriam, Dr. Busiku, is very critical. What kind of support does the government provide to people like them that are on at the forefront?
Yeah, we have to make sure that we support people like Miriam in the sense that they are really the point of contact for the health system. So we ensure that we always provide them with all the necessary tools and logistics that they require. So when we look at case management, we ensure that they have all the diagnostic tools always in stock for them to not only use at the health facility, but also supply the community health workers, as well as the drugs as well. And even when we do our net distribution,
yes,
that goes through the health facilities as well. And really, they are the point of contact even for social mobilization. All health facilities in Zambia have what is called a neighborhood health committee. And the facility is actually the lead of that neighborhood health committee. So they do community mobilization, they do education, and really we have to support them with all the necessary tools through logistics, provision, continued capacity building, and really meeting them as well as best as we can for all their needs.
That's great. And we are joined now by Dr. David Schellenberg, Scientific Advisor with the World Health Organization's Global Malaria Program. Dr. Schellenberg, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for joining me.
It's great to have you. The big news, as we all know, the WHO has announced that trials of the RTSS will take place in three African countries. First of all, let me have your reaction on this news that WHO is putting out this vaccine, which took quite a number of years, if I'm not mistaken, about 30 years to develop. How did we get here?
Well, as you said, it's a really long story. The vaccine was invented 30 years ago, but it's been refined as a result of the development program. I think it's fairly typical with any new product to have to experiment a little bit with the dose of the product, make sure it's safe, and slowly move forward as you're confident that it's safe and that it's likely to show some benefit. And it was only after the turn of the millennium, in the late 2000s, that it was thought ready to do a phase three trial. And what that means is it's a pivotal moment for the development of any product, where you test it in very rigorous conditions in the population who it's intended to benefit. And it's at that point really you decide whether or not this is a go or a no-go for submission to regulatory authorities with a view to larger scale use. So it's a long and very detailed process which requires care and attention, and that's why it's taken so long.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask you this. Three countries were selected, Kenya, Ghana, and Malawi. We have here with us Dr. Busiku Amaiza, who is epidemiologist with Zambia's National Malaria Elimination Program. What were the criteria in selecting the countries? Why not Zambia? Why not Cote d'Ivoire, where I'm from, for example?
good questions. And you can imagine that it's not a very easy decision to take. And maybe the first thing I should just say is that the vaccine is definitely not a magic bullet. It's not something which is going to solve all the malaria problems. Mm-hmm. It's only partially efficacious, and I can explain a little bit more what that means. Partly as a result of this, the World Health Organization's advisors recommended that the vaccine should only be used in areas with moderate or high transmission of malaria. So that was one of the criteria that was required.
Okay.
The process actually started with WHO inviting countries, ministries of health, to express their interest in participating in a pilot implementation program. And that expression of interest was launched at the end of 2015. Okay. 10 countries expressed their interest. And then a set of criteria were applied, and this included the intensity of malaria transmission. And this high, moderate or high transmission of malaria It needs to be in a situation where there's already a well-functioning malaria control program, because unfortunately there are a good number of countries where, despite high-performing malaria control programs, there's still an enormous burden of malaria disease and death. So it's thought important that we really need to be adding this this vaccine on top of the interventions which are already made available from well-performing malaria control programs.
Okay.
We also had to think about how well the immunisation programs are performing as well. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we would not want to burden an immunisation program if it was already struggling to deliver the vaccines that it's currently trying to implement. So these are some of the key criteria that were applied when trying to identify countries to run the pilot program.
Okay, that's understandable. Definitely, Dr. Busiku, let me have your reaction on this new vaccine that was announced to be rolled out in three countries.
Well, I think for us it's exciting news.
Yeah.
I think generally, as a malaria community, we've realized that we may not be able to achieve malaria elimination in the shortest period of time unless we are open to new innovations and new tools. Mm-hmm. And definitely the possibility of having a vaccine that can be used to protect our populations is very exciting for us. So we look forward to the findings of the trials that are going to be done in these three countries. And the beauty about the countries that have been selected, Zambia is almost similar. So we will wait for the results, and I'm sure this is something that we look forward to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So speaking of looking forward to Dr. Schellenberg, what will be assessed during this pilot program with the three countries?
Okay, so as I said, the vaccine is only partially effective. And what that means is that if you think about malaria cases which come to the health facilities as outpatients, the vaccine over a four-year period reduces outpatient attendances for malaria by about 40%. It reduces malaria admissions by about 31%. So modest levels of protection against outpatient and severe malaria. So one of the key questions for the for this program is to understand whether or not the vaccine actually reduces malaria sufficiently to improve survival. And I think we would all acknowledge that above all else, what we would want to do would be to improve survival. And if the vaccine can be shown to have an effect on survival, that would be very, very important.
So,
let me just continue for a moment. Because,
yes.
One of the challenges is that the vaccine needs to be delivered not as a three-dose regimen, as many vaccines are currently delivered, but as a four-dose regimen. So this means that there will need to be some new contacts between children and the vaccination programs. We don't take it for granted that carers will be able to bring their children for immunizations at four distinct time points. So what we want to do in this pilot implementation program is just make absolutely sure that it's feasible to deliver the four-dose regimen of the vaccine at appropriate time points to the target age group.
Tell us about the input of community health workers in this process. Joining us here is one of them who works in Zambia, and we really know how critical community health workers are. What is the significance of the work in this trial phase?
That's a really good question. And I should say that the announcement yesterday was of the three countries, Kenya, Ghana, and Malawi, that will be participating in the pilot program. We expect the vaccinations to start sometime in the middle of next year, with a bit of optimism, maybe before the middle of next year. And we're just at the stage where we're starting to plan in detail with the different countries about really what the implementation of the vaccine will consist of. Regarding the role of community health workers, I know that they play a very important role in supporting immunisation programmes by ensuring that carers are aware that children should be taken for immunisation, sometimes facilitating identification of children who not actually received the vaccinations that they should have, or are running the risk of being late for vaccinations, and maybe assisting in outreach activities where teams of health staff, including community health workers, work together to take the services to hard-to-reach villages. So I can't give you details of how community health workers will be involved with the vaccine programme, but I think it's very likely that in at least some countries they will be playing a very important role.
Okay. And speaking about the role of community workers, there is also the role of population, Dr. Busiku. Mm. You know, population that are affected by malaria also have a role to play. What is your take on this? What is the role that they can play to be part of the solution and not just wait for the government all the time or donors to come in and help?
Yeah. I think for Zambia, we've actually kind of moved to having some sort of slogan or motto, which is basically talking about malaria ends with me.
Okay.
So this is, we've been referring to this in a very humorous way. We say our Zambitious agenda is that malaria ends with me.
Okay.
So communities, in whatever way, have to play a role. So it's about them being able to participate in the whole process of trying to improve these interventions that are actually directed at them and be proactive as communities to demand certain services.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this can only happen when you actually educate individuals about the need for them to actually act on a certain illness of public health interest.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
And we are going to take a short break and continue this conversation. So, Dr. Schellenberg, stick with us. We're going to take a short break now. And Dr. Busiku, we're very happy to have you here. We know you're not going anywhere. So, all right. So it's time for a short break. And now the news with Kira Spruill.
Thank you, Lenore. A new experimental blood test can quickly diagnose malaria from other infections. The blood test, developed by researchers at Stanford University in California, looks for patterns of immune system activation to determine whether a person is infected with the malaria parasite and not a bacterium or virus. It is reportedly 96% accurate. The findings were just recently presented at a meeting of the European Congress of Clinical Microbiology and Infectious Diseases for World Malaria Day this week. The World Health Organization medical workers mark progress in Southeast Asia malaria fight. Concerted campaigns in the Greater Mekong Subregion, GMS, to radically reduce the impact of malaria has lifted hopes a vital target to eradicate malaria from the region may be within reach. Scientists say the outlook is positive for eliminating severe forms of malaria across the region within the next decade. The goal is for most of the GMS countries by 2025 to try and eliminate Fusarium malaria, the most severe form, and then by 2030, basically all forms of all species of malaria. And finally, doing moderate exercise several times a week is the best way to keep the mind sharp if you're over 50, research suggests. In this analysis of 39 previous studies, researchers from the University of Canberra in Australia looked at the effects of at least 4 weeks of structured physical exercise on the brain function of adults. Thinking and memory skills were most improved when people exercised the heart and muscles on a regular basis, a review of the studies found. This remained true in those who already showed signs of cognitive decline. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news.
Welcome back to Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu. For those of you joining us late tonight, we are discussing malaria. Today is World Malaria Day. And joining us in the studio is Dr. Busiku Hamaiza, epidemiologist with Zambia's National Malaria Elimination Program, and also Dr. David Schellenberg, scientific advisor with the World Health Organization. Also sitting with us is Miriam Chisamba. She is a certified midwife and a community health worker in Zambia. Now, before the break, we were talking about the role of community and community health worker. And Miriam, this leads me to you to ask you, people, you know, we talked about the importance that you have to play in your role. What is your experience in terms of the help and resources that you have access to in doing your work on a daily basis?
Okay, on the day-to-day, daily basis, the resources are well, we are well equipped. Nowadays, everything is there. The diagnostics are there. The treatment is there. We've never run out of the logistics, I think, for about 2 years now. Mm-hmm. It's all due to the data management, as in when you report, then you get the supplies. But if you don't, then you won't have the supplies. And then we have everything well abundantly. Even the insecticide treated needs are readily available. Someone can demand it, and then we are able to give it to them.
That's great. And Dr. Busiku, she talks about the fact that she has access to what she needs. But this is not the case everywhere. Many health workers complain about lack of resources, whether it's treatment, prevention tools, or other things. So in the case of Zambia, where does the support comes from in terms of financing? How much is the government and how much is donors?
Yes. So in Zambia, with regard to malaria, I think the government is actually the biggest supporter. There's a permanent budget line in the annual budget that is dedicated for just malaria commodities and consumables. Then on top of that, government pays all the workers, not only those that deliver health services, but also those that actually implement these activities. So all the partnerships that we receive actually work within the government structures. So we have extensive support that is coming in from the Global Fund. We have extensive support from the President's Malaria Initiative. Mm-hmm. And we have also support from PATH. And this is in addition to also support that we get even locally from the private sector that support the fight against malaria.
Okay. Now, Dr. Schellenberg, some observers say that one of the greatest challenges to controlling malaria is the lack of financial resources. And mm-hmm. there is the commitment of politicians and governments that is not where it should be. What is your reaction to it, and how does WHO address this?
Well, thank you. I must say it's really very heartening to hear from Miriam how she feels that she has the supplies that are needed for her to do the work to control malaria. And I recognise very much what Dr. Busiku is saying as well about the importance of domestic investment. So governments of countries affected by malaria investing in malaria control. We know that overall, across the world, the total investment in malaria runs to about $2.9 billion every year, which sounds like a huge amount of money. We know that the countries that are affected themselves by malaria contribute just less than one-third of that total amount of investment, that the US contributes just a little bit more than one-third, and the UK, I think, is the third largest funder, contributing about 16%. Many of these resources are channeled through the Global Fund Against AIDS, TB and Malaria, as Dr. Busiku also mentioned. So $2.9 billion is what's currently being invested. But this is just a little bit less than half of the amount that is estimated would be necessary to maximize the effect of malaria.
Now, it seems like the story is pretty positive when it comes from Zambia with regards to tackling malaria. But Miriam, I really want to ask you, what do you see as some of the challenges that are remaining in terms of doing your work and just tackling malaria in general?
Okay. I think the challenges that we face is that, where I come from my rural health center where I'm working from, most of the challenges, it's like for the community health workers, for them to come and get the supplies, it's really a challenge because most of the part is the area is rural.
Okay.
And then they really have to travel long distance to come and get the logistics, that is the diagnostics and then the treatment. Really, it's really a challenge for them. Like during the rain season, sometimes it's rainy, they don't have the raincoats on which they can use to come and collect the supplies, even the bicycles. It's really a challenge for them to come to the center. So meaning if they run out of the supplies, the logistics, meaning a mother or a child has to walk the long distance to come to the facility to access the service, or which they can access it right there in the community. I think those are the challenges that we face. Mm. Yes.
Very good point. Infrastructure, Dr. Busiku, that's really, I mean, that's a reality. You see that challenge. It's not just a Zambia issue. It's everywhere, really, at least in many countries. How do we address that?
No, that's very true. Though we've made a lot of progress in the past, there's still quite a lot of work to be done. Mm-hmm. And really trying to increase access through infrastructure to the populations that actually need these services. I think one of the key challenges really moving forward with this elimination agenda is trying to reach the last mile. We know that as malaria reduces, you only usually find the cases in those kind of areas which you can describe as very hard to reach. So yes. How do you get to those individuals?
Yes.
And this is where the thinking around really capacity building of community health workers will assist, because community health workers actually live with these communities. They are the uncles, they are the mothers, they are the aunties who are trained and given the skill to be able to diagnose and treat malaria as close to the home as possible. And we know that prompt treatment is also really a way of preventing further transmission, because then you treat an individual quickly so that they're not carrying the parasite for a longer period of time and then being a reservoir for onward transmission. So that's very, very, very critical to us. And I think really another challenge that we need to be very cognizant of is not to be enemies of our own success. We have to ensure that until malaria is completely not only eliminated but eradicated throughout the world, we have to make sure that we still talk about the visibility of this disease, mm-hmm. because it can come back if we relax. So mm-hmm. we definitely have a lot more additional investments that need to be made, capacity building in infrastructure, human resource, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one thing that I found interesting in about the strategy, this new project that you're launching in elimination, is you went from you rebranded really the strategy from control mm-hmm. to elimination. We may understand the difference, but can you explain to us better what the difference is?
Great. Actually, today in my home country, in Zambia, the president actually led the nation to commemorate World Malaria Day.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the activities that the president was involved in was to actually launch, as you've rightly said, our elimination strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So just to demonstrate the level of commitment towards this, the name of the program in Zambia used to be National Malaria Control Center,
okay.
really focusing on controlling the disease and trying to mitigate the impact of the disease within the country. But now the mandate has been changed to push towards actually eliminating the disease from the country. So there's been this rebranding process
okay.
that has happened, and really trying to push everybody to jump onto the bandwagon with us and push this forward.
Fantastic. And before we end, Dr. Schellenberg, let me give you the last words here. Where do we go from where we are in terms of the RTSS after, let's say, after the pilot program is completed? When do we anticipate to see perhaps access to everyone with this vaccine?
Oh, that's a really good and a really big question. all I can say is that vaccinations, as soon as the vaccine program begins, we'll be looking at the data to look at the feasibility to consolidate the safety profile. As the data accumulates, certainly by 2020, it's possible that the WHO advisory committees will have a chance to review that again. At the latest, 2022, there should be an updated policy recommendation. So this is the sort of time frame that we're looking to. I should stress that we don't see this as a silver bullet. This is something which should be complementary to the currently deployed interventions, the insecticide-treated mosquito nets,
okay.
Malaria diagnosis and treatment. But I hope it will help to drive the nail into the coffin of malaria.
Fantastic. Dr. Schellenberg, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Busiku, we appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
And Miriam, thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to all of you for listening to the show. I'm your host, Lina Romudu in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi and Kira Sproul with the news. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.